You're listening to Bit by Bit, July 25th, 2010. Zoe, here we are again, and where are we?
The North Station in Boston, Massachusetts.
As you can hear in the background.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back. That conductor, he's got to do his job, and we're trying to get our interviews done, or our intros done to the workshops that we saw at the Building Learning Communities Conference, put on by the Allen November Group in downtown Boston on July 15th. 14th, 15th, 16th. And today you're going to hear an incredible workshop from my good friend Maria Nee and two new good friends that Maria brought, Amanda Marinin and Kathy Cassidy. And you'll see how they've made a global connection with their kindergarten, first grade, and second grade classrooms. And this was a wonderful workshop. And I know you're going to enjoy it. So keep checking back. We'll be putting up more workshops every day from the Building Learning Communities Conference in 2010.
Nice lunch, and welcome back to session three. This is Amanda Marinin, Maria Nee, Kathy Cassidy, and they're going to do a presentation on, well, it's called Let's Do It, Planning for Technology in Early Childhood Classrooms. Excuse me. You all set?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so welcome. We're glad you're here. Looks like a full house, and we're ready to rock and roll. We hope you enjoy the ride. So I am Maria Nee, and I teach kindergarten in Deerfield, New Hampshire.
And I'm Amanda Marinin, traveled a long way to be here. I have a year two class in Brisbane, Australia.
Mm-hmm. And my name is Kathy Cassidy, and I teach grade one in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, Canada. And if you have trouble hearing us, there's only one mic, but we all have teacher voices. If in the back you're having trouble, just put your hand up and we will make sure that we keep using that teacher voice so that you can hear us in the back. Today we want to talk, this is the structure. I always like to know where I'm going before I listen to a session. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to talk about why we think it's important to use technology with even the youngest learners in our schools. Then we want to talk about some specific tools and how we organize our classrooms for using those tools. And then we've got a whole bunch of little ideas. We call it little ideas that can grow, that will come really fast and be little suggestions that you might want to use. And then at the end, we hope there's time for some questions.
So let's start with the why. Already this morning, already this morning in Mitch's keynote, and I guess I was in Darren Kuropatwa's session, and I was also following the Twitter stream. We're already hearing a lot about giving agency to the children, that the kids are just consuming, you know, that's okay, but really they need to be creating that content. So why do we plan to integrate that technology into our early years classrooms? Because it allows for far more authentic learning. It gives kids an audience. It allows them to be collaborative, and learning is social. So it's the perfect tool to allow them to do that. In Darren's session, he was talking about that metacognition. So we'll hear a little bit too about, I guess it's a bit about the pedagogy, but these tools allow children to think about their thinking, to be reflective and self-directed, share their learning with others, and learn from others as well.
And I'm multitasking. Surprise. The other reason that I feel that it's important to use these tools is that I want to provide the hook for those learners in my classroom for whom more traditional, more, you know, the ones that come eager, they don't need those hooks, eager to learn. But those others that are more reluctant, the kids that would really need a different kind of motivation. So I like to find the tools and the ways to engage those students. To provide those alternative and new ways to create learning opportunities. And the other part, because it's so important to me as a learner, is to create a collaborative environment, to have kids be able to make connections with even kids in their own school that they really don't get to see because they're in the classroom all the time, or across the ocean, either ocean, doesn't matter, or way up north in Canada. So to really make those global connections. That's the why for me.
And for me, it's all of the things that these ladies have already mentioned. Those are all excellent reasons. And I also think that it's important that our kids come to us having used DSs at home and having eye touches, and they have computers. I don't think that we can ask them, even at a young age, to power down and ignore that part of their life. It's part of their life at home, and it should be part of their life at school as well. The world is really changing, and schools have to change along with that. And some people say to me, well, that takes a lot of time, I don't have time for that. And I just say, well, everything I do as a teacher takes time. And so it's just a choice of what do I want to put that time into. So there's a bit of the background about what we do as, about why we do what we do. Now I have a video that I want to show you. And this is a video just to give you a little bit of background. Everybody wants to know what did other people's classrooms look like. This is what our classrooms look like. We hope that the pictures show you what it looks like when we're using technology in our classrooms in a way that it wouldn't show to just tell you about it.
I like using computers because they help me learn. I live in Deerfield, New Hampshire in the USA. Queensland, Australia. We live in Bristol, Saskatchewan, Canada. I like to skate. When I was sick, I got to skate with my class. It's skating with the people on the ground, so I like meeting new friends.
Study even helps me learn new words. For example, when we Skype Mrs. Cassidy, I learned the new word furnace and basin, and I don't have a furnace and a basin at my place, but I know that you really need them in Canada because it's cold.
I like to escape just because things took other kids around the world to get out of there.
Life is wonderful and there are people you never know before.
I like to vlog because it shows people how I learn.
I like other people's vlogs because I can see their beautiful pictures.
I like blogging because they can learn how to write.
I like looking at other people's videos on their blogs.
I have my own blog and it helps me be a better reader and typer. Vlogging and using all the cameras and videos makes learning really fun.
I like reading comments on my blog.
I like to look because I can connect with other people. For example, one time on the holidays, Luke asked me, "Can you please help me make a blog?" And I said, "Okay." And he replied to me saying, "Thanks." And I said, "It's okay." And I was so thrilled to see them. It's really good for our learning because we can ask questions and they can answer them, because that's so that we know what we can do for our learning.
We record the things that we learned and put it on our blog.
I like to make videos because I'm making the video. We look to before. We like cookies because they're fun.
Even Mrs. Marion be better learners.
And I like how we can connect with the audience around the whole world.
All of the Torontonians are teachers and learners, even Mrs. Marion.
By blogging and Twittering and Skyping, we help ourselves learn. And we help other people around the whole world learn too.
Document what we have so that you can always come back to it. We've created a wiki that has all the things that you're going to hear today. So the video is posted on the wiki. There are resources that things that we've talked about. This is the address. And if I'm not incorrect, if I'm correct, Bob Sprankle is hoping to make a podcast of this presentation, so the audio will be available at bitbybit.com.
BobSprankle.com.
That's right. Sorry about that. And also, to help you help us learn on our wiki, we have created a page that says Continuing the Conversation, and you can even click and get there right today. We've created a wall wisher. It's a tool, kind of an online tool where you can slap post-its all over the place. You can continue the conversation by sharing tips that you might have, how you plan for technology, and your sticky notes will appear there. Maybe there'll be some interaction here amongst people who have heard the presentation or are coming back to visit. And also, if you have some questions or concerns, things that we raised today that you'd like to talk to us about, we'll be here all week, and we welcome that conversation as well. One other thing is that you do not have to click on Join the Wiki in order to access it. We have it locked so that there aren't a lot of changes that are made to it. You just can use all the things there, but you really don't have to join. So, in order to get things going in our classroom, I start a conversation with my incoming students and parents through my classroom blog. My class is called the Kinder Kids, and during the summer I begin to post, actually really in August, I begin to post information. I show the classroom bare and empty and continue to update that so that it increases interest in the classroom. And then early in the year, I have a parent meeting. And I would say, when I mean early in the year, by the first week of school, I invite parents to come to school to learn how I'm going to be communicating with their children. I also look at registration time. They sign off or don't sign off on internet use and posting student work to a variety of places. I make sure that I check to see who's given permission, who I have to talk to give them a little bit of extra information to help them know that this is how we work in the classroom, and encourage them to give permission for sharing that. I talk to them about how I keep their child safe, and how it's not unlike taking their child on a field trip. There are precautions and things that we need to do, and go into that, answer questions. And I have to say that for the past 4 years, everyone has given permission. There have never been any concerns. And I work really hard to make sure that I don't make mistakes that would lead someone to think that I was negligent in my job. Also, early in the year, I set up children's blogs. I create a white background. I list the names along the side once I have permission to do that. And the children begin their first post by using some type of a drawing tool. Sometimes it's an online drawing tool, sometimes it's commercial software, and they create a picture. I like to take my kids to the computer lab on the first day of school because we're a preschool through grade 8 school, and most teachers aren't ready to take their classes to the computer lab on the first day of school, or the second, or the third. And I like the kids to go home and say, number one, we learned to read today, because there's always something they learn to read. And the second thing I like them to be able to say is, and we use computers, because it's a real important part of my curriculum. So they usually will create a picture. I will either take a little verbal note, or I'll talk to them later about a dictated sentence or something about their story. If they can identify some sounds and words that describe their picture, that's fine. Try to have that posted by the first weekend, and we're off.
And that's what it looked like in her kindergarten classroom. In my grade one classroom, we begin in the lab as well. I take them to the lab, and I have a pretend student in my classroom every year, and I use that to model for them. This is what you do as you set up your blog, because my teacher blog looks different than theirs does. And so I take them through the steps of how to do it, how to set it up. I let them make it their own by adding colors, and by later on we add some images along the side. And I like to get them that first day to get the first post. Now, this is the first week of grade one. These kids are not writing anything readable at this point. But I try to always have another adult, at least one, come with me to the lab those first few times. And after they're done writing, then they read it back to me. And in brackets, I put a little editor's note that this is what they meant it to say. This is what they wanted to say on their blog today. And then I keep doing that each time. And as the year progresses, some kids are readable very early in the year, some not till later in the year. And I write the editor's note as long as it's necessary so that other people can understand what they've said and they can respond to it through comments. So it starts in the lab. We go once a week. We have an hour that we go together and we do other things besides blogging. But when we're blogging, we blog together. That practice, by October, they're getting to be pretty independent, most of them. And by Christmas, I expect them to be doing it as part of a learning center in the classroom. So while I'm working on guided reading, they are with a group of students. Another group of students is on the computers in the classroom, and they're doing some blogging there. And as the year progresses, I teach them things like copying and pasting the URL of their blog, for example, on comments. And that I would teach to kids who are ready for it. They would become our classroom experts who can teach the other kids so that I don't have to tell each kid individually.
And of course then in my classroom, because I'm teaching year two students, so 7 and 8 year olds, really we can start where Kathy's children left off. We don't have a lab in our school. We made the decision to disband that a few years ago. So computers are within the room, and I'm lucky enough to have 8 computers in my classroom across both platforms. So for us, blogging starts day one. I was this year lucky enough to have some younger siblings of children that I had taught about 4 years ago. So they came in already knowing how to blog. They'd set up their own play blogs at home. So as Kathy mentioned, using those experts, they could even take on part of that role from day one. So it begins with lots of modelling within the classroom. Like Kathy, I like to try to get a blog post up on the class blog on day one. Using Blogger, I use the same blog each year, but as a class, we look at different templates. How can we, how can they make that blog that has a little bit of history behind it from previous classes, how can they make that their own? So we go and change the template. But they're learning how I've taken them through how to post, how to comment, how to use various tools, like putting a Bocce on the blog is one of the first things that we might do. So adding their voice to that blog day one.
She means Bocce.
Oh, sorry, Bocce, sorry.
It's those vowels.
And so even from that day one, children begin commenting and posting. Again, I try, like Kathy, I try to have a few parents in the room to help with that, because whilst they're year two, there are still some who are going to still be those fairly emerging readers and writers. This year I set up, my children have their own blog folio as well, which is really their digital portfolio. I set them all up myself this year, and like Maria said, I left a blank, a white template so that they could make it their own. In the past, I have had older students, year seven students, so 12-year-olds, come down and buddy up for about an hour and just step my little ones through the process of creating a Gmail account and setting up their own blog. But unfortunately, that couldn't happen this year. So that gradual release model for me happens a lot earlier. And in actual fact, it actually happened for me this year on day one, because I had about six little people who came in saying, I want to show you my play blog. But I know that that's just where I can add my virtual pets and all those other little, and even using the word widget from a couple of them on day one. And I thought, wow, where are these kids going to go with their learning this year? So, they were already on day one then helping others how to comment, how to put a URL for their own blog or the class blog into a comment space. There's a lot of point in time teaching then, so in enabling them to mentor each other, and I can set little people off to just go and show others. And it might even be a parent that they're also mentoring as well, or other teachers.
Another important piece of technology use in the classroom is videos. And this fits really nicely with our blog, because we have a way to communicate with the world, but we don't always have to post our videos online. For me, with my little ones, I use video during the first month of school to kind of define what we're going to be doing in the classroom and giving children opportunities to talk about something they've made in the block room. I mean, I'm still a kindergarten teacher, and I always will be, and we have lots of different tools for learning. We have blocks, we have the easel, we have pattern blocks and Unifix cubes. We do what kindergarten is all about, and it's exploring learning with our hands. So my kids can't take those block buildings home, so they're very eager to share and make a video. I introduce the video cameras, I model it first. That's in about the first 15 seconds before the cameras pulled out of my hands and said, let me do it. Many children have come to school already using flip videos that their parents have, so they're very familiar with recording and videotaping. The only thing we might have to do is we say, this is a video that we're going to use to express our learning. So we're not making Google faces and there's a little bit of time for that exploration, and then we say, you know, we're sharing our learning, and that ends very quickly because they want to use the camera. The responsibility shifting to the student happens very fast. Once I've shown a couple of children how the cameras work, or the experts emerge from the group, they're teaching each other. So someone might come over to me and say, Mrs. Nee, I made a pattern with my pattern blocks. I want to do a video. Well, go ask Ethan. He did one yesterday. And it just spreads like wildfire. It goes viral, as they say in the classroom. As the year progresses, I eventually also shift the editing of the video to the students. And I'm very fortunate to have an interactive whiteboard. I don't use that interactive whiteboard as the presentation model in the classroom. It is another one of the tools that's for learning activities in the classroom. So here's a child who is videotaping a Skype chat, so in order to make a movie about Skyping with friends. And they will eventually download that video. And no, not all 18 children are proficient in that, but I also don't have 18 children that leave at the same level with math skills at the end of the year. So, you know, there are strengths that arise from each individual student, but they use the whiteboard to edit the video. Some just make some decisions about sequencing. And that leads me to another use of video. We have a great opportunity to talk about sequencing. It's one of those early childhood things about how to tell a story and how to put that story in order and retell stories. This is an example of making lemonade for our Mother's Day celebration. We made homemade lemonade as we were reviewing what the steps were to make that. All of a sudden, they said, well, let's make a video and we can show other people. And so the kids worked in pairs, one videotaped, we storyboarded it out, they chose what scene they wanted to shoot, and each child got a chance to shoot the piece. And I had three young girls who volunteered to edit the whole piece based on the storyboard that we created, comparing, and you know, if anyone could be a fly on the wall to hear those girls talk, no, and they're dragging the piece all over the screen to make sure that it was in sequence. So we've done that for How to Make Maple Syrup. We did that because we were recreating the steps. I make maple syrup at my house, and the kids came to my house for a field trip. So we were recreating that as just a sketch on a regular chart pad, and all of a sudden the kids said, let's make a video. So we actually made a Common Craft video, the type where the drawings slide in and out and no human faces are seen. And so the kids moved it in and narrated that.
And we use video a lot in my classroom to show our learning. In fact, I'm doing a session on Fridays for a commercial about using video in the classroom. But we, as a class, we always plan together. We talk about what are we wanting to show, and then we think how is the best way to show that. Sometimes we work in small groups after the kids are experienced making videos, and we talk about in the small groups, they talk about what they're going to do. And when we're going to do that, I sometimes will make up a little planning sheet for them that has spaces where they write, who is going to hold the camera? Where are you going to do this? What are you trying to show? Who is going to talk? What are you going to talk about? Do you need any props, things that will help you in the video? Just another way that they can show the things that they're learning.
In my context, though, unfortunately, I still have I have a very supportive admin who allow me to do what I'm doing, but when it comes to video, there is still just that little bit of fear. I guess unlike Kathy and Maria, and here in the North American context where most of the children do not wear school uniforms, my kids are easily identifiable by their uniform, and my admin and even parent body have a little bit of fear about video of their children being online. So at this point in time, whilst I'm trying to change that fear, I have to respect that. We do use a lot of video, obviously, in the classroom because my children have Blogfolios, so they're using that video to record their learning and reflect on their learning. However, unless it's maybe, let's just say they've created a pattern and they might video and talk about that pattern but without showing themselves, that can go up on their own individual blog file or the class blog. But unfortunately, I can't, unlike Kathy and Maria who have these wonderful videos of children talking about their learning and what they're doing, I can't do that. So I've had to come up with other ways. And this year, in particular, we've moved into actually creating screencasts. And that came out of that need of parents saying, "How? I know you've shown me, how do I leave a comment on the blog? How do I leave a comment on a Blogmeister blog? Because it's totally different to Blogger. How? Kids, one of my little ones, that one was talking about Twitter, she was getting frustrated because so many were coming and asking her, how do you leave a Vokey on the blog? And so said, well, okay, can we make a movie about that? Can we make a video about that? So I showed one how to create a screencast, and 10 minutes later, there was one. And so, and they've really taken that on board, that seeing themselves as teachers, and here we are, we talked about that this morning, kids not just consuming that content, but creating content that then can be used to teach others.
Another type of content that we use to show our learning is to, is to create audio. And Amanda's going to tell you all about that.
That's right, Maria. Because again, I guess, whereas obviously in that video, you see Maria and Kathy's kids speaking about their learning. I can't do that, so I guess this is where my iPhone becomes a very popular tool within the classroom. I have parents who can't believe that I trust those children with my iPhone. Why wouldn't I? So using a tool, like for example, like PhotoBabble, which I believe you can use on the iPad as well, maybe, if you, I don't know. But again, just a talking image. And that was another way for the children to reflect on their learning, but be able to easily speak and record what they've done. So here was an example of a child who was investigating half of a number, took the snap and then recorded the process that he had used to do that.
Your turn. I also use audio in the classroom, and I try to use it in the context of the classroom. We don't go out in the hallway. The hallway is probably no more quiet than it is in my room. We use a special little old-fashioned bell, as the kids say. It's one of those little bells that you can slap on the counter and demand service. The kids just hit that bell and they go, they wait. There's a nice loud ding and they will say, recording. And the class quiets down. And if not, they hit it again. And it just eliminate some of that background noise. Right here I'm using an old, one of the first video iPods with a microphone that is recording. We have all sorts of generations of iPods in the classroom, and here these two children are taking turns recording a story about their picture about making maple syrup. This is the sugar house and the maple tree and my house, and you can even see my deck off that. So we use that video in that way. We also use Vokies and VoiceThread to archive stories and information and learning. A lot of times I will have difficulty creating the audio right on the VoiceThread in the classroom because of bandwidth issues, and so we will sequence the pictures in VoiceThread or create the Voki avatar. But when it comes to the audio, I'll have the kids record right on an iPod or an iPod Touch. Yes?
I don't know what a
Voki
is.
A Voki, if you go to Voki.com, it'll tell you all about it. But it's a wonderful little tool where kids can interact, where kids can create a picture and record, and actually there is a place to do audio comments.
VOKI.
VOKI.
And there is a link on the wiki.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then we, both of those sites and other sites allow you to upload audio. And that works so much better. We can edit that audio. I always say that we can edit out Mrs. Knee going, ready, go. If someone sneezes or coughs or whatever, we can edit that out too.
Wikis are a tool that I use fairly frequently in my classroom, and I use them primarily as a collection agency for information. For example, when this shows when we were studying the letters of the alphabet, we would go over them again at the beginning of grade one. We were collecting all of the videos that we made onto a wiki, and other classes were contributing videos that they had made about those letters of the alphabet as well, so we were learning from that. This is a screenshot of another wiki that I used. We were wanting to know what 1,000 of something looked like, so we collected 1,000 names, and I've done that also with traditions or with rituals, whatever we're learning about. If I want input from other people, I would set up a wiki, then I might tweet it on Twitter, I might put it on a link on our blog or on my webpage, and people come in and people are happy to contribute to the learning of the kids in my class. It's a wonderful tool.
And as we know, learning is social, and little people
are just constantly engaged in conversations, and especially in early years classrooms. And with the technology that's available today, why should that conversation just take place within the four walls of your classroom when you've got something like Skype? Last year, with a rebuilding program that was going on at my school, and I was moved classrooms. I was in a room that, or in a block actually, where they had neglected to put in wireless connectivity, and for some reason, just everything was just not working correctly. Yet I could pick up a very faint signal from the staff room next door, and all I could do for 2 terms, 6 months, was Skype. Don't know why, but that it allowed us to do that. So my kids just ran with it. They'd run past the computer and see that if either Kathy was online or Maria was online, and just like, can we talk? And that's where I guess I have an inquiry-based approach to learning within my classroom. So I'm totally at ease with if they see that someone's online, can we go and have a conversation? Can we share our learning? Can we just chat? Yeah, go with it, run with it. And I suppose it was even with when you heard that little boy talking about furnace and basement, that came just one day, they saw that Kathy was online, can we chat with her? And Kathy showed them the snow, things that are totally foreign to children in Brisbane, where our climate's very warm. But you know, you can't plan for those sorts of that sort of learning. Here they are, they straight away after they're talking about furnace and basement, went away, Googled that, got onto the dictionary, found out a little bit more. So they would want to go off and investigate, well, what's the climate like in Canada? How do they cope with that cold weather? How do they play if it's really cold? And those sorts of things are important because it connects us all as learners, and you get to understand who that other person is you're talking to. And I think it's a really great tool, and kids can then see that, the walls of your classroom are not, they don't bind you. They really open you out to the rest of the world when you're using Skype.
And we use Skype in kindergarten as well. I believe that it's important for kids to feel like they've made discoveries. And so I keep Skype open on the laptop that's connected to the whiteboard. So every once in a while, the Skype bubble will pop up. One of my friends is online. And someone will say, oh, look what's happening. I say, oh, that's Skype. We're not going to talk to them yet. And don't really get into it too much. And eventually, we bring Skype into the classroom. What's Skype? I might show them. We can have a conversation with text in the text chat. One morning, Masa, who lives in Tokyo, kind of forgot, and he saw me online, and it was 8:30. We were doing our group meeting, and he types a little chat, hi, Maria, how are you? And the kids are like, oh, look, hi, Maria, and they're reading this, he's a principal of a school in Tokyo we've met through projects, and I said, oh, it's Masa, he's in Japan, and they're like, oh, I wonder what the weather is, let's Skype him. And so quickly wrote back and said, kids want to Skype you. And he says, oh, it's 10:30, you're in school. It was 10:30 at night for him. Mm-hmm. And he said, sure, got his, opened up his computer and had probably a 10-minute chat with the kids. They wanted to know about the weather. So I use it as something that they kind of discover its usefulness. Early in the year, if we're setting up a more formal Skype call, I'm putting up the equipment, but I'm always talking about it. Okay, I need the tripod. I need to, attach the camera. And that's probably about 15, 20 minutes before the session actually begins. The kids are still working, and they're all, I have a big metal cabinet, and they see those red doors open, and they just come running, and they're like magnets to metal. And they're like, oh, something's happening. So gradually, the responsibility gets turned over to them, but by modeling it and by talking about what I'm doing, and this is a real early days picture because you see my projector there. We now have an interactive whiteboard with a built-in projector, but we started out slow, and the kids take responsibility. So by the end of the year, we end up with kids setting up for me. Oh, we're Skyping with Mrs. Cassidy's class today? Okay, I'll get the tripod. I'll set it up. Oh, Mrs. Nee, can you get the hard wire so that we won't get disconnected? These two boys right now are just really setting up, He's making sure that the camera, I use a, just a regular digital video camera attached with FireWire so that we can focus in more on faces. So he's checking it out. And this child is the quietest child in the class, but boy, he works on detail. And he's, you know, he always makes sure that that is precise and ready to go. Someone gets the snowball mic or whatever it is. This child up here actually was in charge of the chat. He was the one that told Mrs. Cassidy that we're just setting up and that we're ready, and let her know who it was that was getting set up. And I actually was just having kids finish their work and come over and join us at the rug. I was able to not really be involved and actually got to enjoy it in a whole different way.
When I do Skype in my classroom, I used to only have the computer screen for the kids to look at. And that's very hard because all the kids want to see what's going on, and it's hard for them to see what's on just one screen. But once I got a projector, it opened up a whole new world with Skype, because now whichever student wants to talk into the camera goes over to the laptop. But the other kids can all see on the big screen exactly what's happening, and it helps to keep them engaged in what's going on in the Skype.
Another way to engage in conversations with others is by using Twitter. I know that for many of you, are there those that would be able to use Twitter, or is it blocked for you? Who's it blocked for, most of you? Yeah. I know there's things like, was it Twitchercate, that you could also use. I'm lucky in that that's not blocked for me within my system. So my little ones have really, really grasped that as a way of connecting with others this year. I sought permission from parents at the start of the year. Our school now is on Twitter as well. I've probably got maybe about 10 parents who are following us on Twitter. I explained that we would not follow them back. Maybe half a dozen parents have come to me and said, I'd like to set up a Twitter account for my child. I said, well, if you want to do that, you monitor that. That's your decision. As a class, we also follow that child back. We check tweets throughout the day, or it's up. I'm not fortunate enough to have an interactive whiteboard, but it's up on the data projector. The kids have learnt, because I'm using a quiet like seismic, they've learnt the difference between the pings. So just a ping from, you know, someone that we might follow, or a ping that's directed at us. And I guess because I've got those older learners, I can then give that responsibility to them to go and have a look and see how we might respond to a tweet. It's been great in actual fact that whilst I've been now on in the US for a month, I think, and I've missed a bit of school. I've missed 2 weeks at the end of one term, and now just our third term's just started. But my kids have still been able to keep, at times, even in real-time contact with me via Twitter, feeling engaged. You know, when I've been able to tweet out pictures, here I am, look guys, I found snow, I'm touching snow. You know, I'm in high heels too, on the top of the Rouse Mountain in Vancouver. So it's a way of, I guess, you know, just keeping connected with others and sharing that learning and engaging in a really valuable conversation with others, which you could still do with your class if you even were behind that wall garden.
So this is the part where we're going to share little ideas that are really little tips that will help the ideas, help things grow in your classroom. So little tips and things that we found to be successful. I also just checked the wall wisher, and thank you very much. Just keep those things, those ideas coming. There was, we will be sharing our Skype names. Our Twitter names at the end of the show, and it's the end of the video, I'll deal with any other things that you might need. So, as educators, we know that our job is hard work. It's really difficult sometimes, but one of the things that makes classroom management so much easier is that by taking the first 6 weeks of the school year to really establish the ground rules for your classroom, no matter what it is that you're teaching. So the routines, anything like that. Well, I just apply that to the technology tools that I use in the classroom. So over time, I begin slow, I work with using the little baby steps that kids might need to know. Bring out the equipment. I don't throw all the netbooks and the microphones and the video cameras out on the first day and say, look what we have in our classroom. I gradually introduce them. Sometimes it takes 6 weeks, sometimes it takes 8 weeks, sometimes it only takes 4 weeks, but I really work hard to establish what the routines are, how we take care of the equipment, where it goes, how you can carry the netbooks around, how to find the best wireless connection in the room. When I had someone visiting me and they said, where's that child going with the netbook? And she was really concerned because he was walking out of the room. I said, well, he's going over to the whatever it's called to get the best wireless and then he'll come back into work. And she's like, he knows how to do that? And I'm like, yes. And then three other children followed too. So it's really, they know. They learn. So by January, there's much more independence. There's some teacher scaffolding. Maybe I'm introducing some new online tools. But by, again, I don't have to do all the teaching. There are experts in the room. By telling a few, it spreads. And by April, most of that work is turned over to the children. In January, kids are getting out the netbooks. They're logging on. I mean, they're turning them on. They're finding the browser. They're logging on, they're clicking as the big screen, as they call it, to enlarge the screen. They know what to do. And if they don't, they know who to ask. And it's not me that they ask. It's just, when it works, it's just the most wonderful thing to see. And gives me a chance to do the other things that I need to do as a teacher.
And once you have those experts within your room, use them not just for educating, helping each other, but for those parents, other teachers, bring them into the room. I actually have set up like an open, my door's always open in my room, but in an afternoon, parents are quite welcome to come in my last session, just turn up on the spot and for that point in time, teaching. So, help, I've forgotten how to add that comment, or I want to help my child be able to, put that bokeh on their blog. How do you do that? And so I'll say, okay, go and see so-and-so, they'll help you. So I guess, develop that flexibility just to allow your kids, and you might think, well, they might be missing out on whatever other lesson you're doing, but think of that valuable lesson. Think about the other skills that they're developing. You learn what they're collaborating with each other and creating and teaching. That's valuable too.
On a totally unrelated topic, lots of people talk to me about, I can't blog. Like, the parents don't want me to blog. The parents don't want me to do this. The parents don't want me to do that. And what I've suggested to some people and it worked for them, and it worked for me, is that instead of asking, can I do this, I just say, this is what we're doing in our class. Please let me know if there's any aspect of this that you're uncomfortable with, and we'll see how we can work around it. For example, what if your child used a fake name? Then would you be comfortable with it? What if I did not post your child's picture at all? Would you be comfortable with that? In fact, I have been doing this for about six classes I've used this now with, and I've only had one parent who did not want. Once they saw what we were doing, saw how they could be involved, there was only one that said they didn't want their child to have their photo posted.
We've talked before about having the Skype call either projected on the wall or on a board, and students are so much more engaged in the call if they can see well. Does it work if you have a laptop? Absolutely. Or if you're using a desktop computer, it absolutely does. But just make sure whatever visual that you're using, that you can gather kids around so that they can see. I choose to use that video camera connected to the FireWire cable because we do a lot of sharing of specific items. We might read a book, we do partner reading with other classes, a class in Maine, Leah's class, and we have done like weekly buddy readings, and so it's really important to focus in on the reader or the text that we're sharing, and that's a personal preference.
I like to have the computers in my classroom facing the classroom. I don't like to have them in a circle around on a circular table. You probably saw that in the picture. I like to have them facing so that when the students are doing something independently, I can tell at a glance
who is not doing what they're supposed to? Who has typed in Webkinz? I can tell that right away and can get that person back on track. And as Maria showed them with her little one setting up for Skype, often sometimes when those who may be a little hesitant, fearful about dipping their toe in and saying, how am I going to manage all of this? You know, how am I going to manage all the computers? If I've got the eye touches in the room, how, you know, that's a lot of responsibility. I don't have time to be setting them up, charging them, plugging, except turning them off and on. You can see little ones can do that, and I do the same. Give responsibility to the kids. Make it one of your classroom jobs that they turn on those computers every day, or switch them off in the afternoon. Make sure that it's their responsibility to plug in the eye touches, plug in the DSs, etc., the cameras, charge the batteries. They can do it.
Twitter is a really powerful tool for us as learners, as adult learners, but it's also powerful for young learners as well. And I had set up a classroom Twitter account, the Kinder Kids, and because we wanted to tweet out things that were happening. And I have to say that it did not evolve into the use that I thought it was going to, but there's another year. I have a few more good years in me. Twitter was first blocked at our school. I learned how to do the workaround from a sixth grade student, but it wasn't until our superintendent found the power of Twitter and our district tech director, they saw the power in that tool for them personally, that it actually became unblocked in our district. Yay, we have a super superintendent, and now we don't even have to worry about the workaround. It's unblocked, and we tweet out little things that are happening in the classroom or maybe questions. I had hoped to really use it as part of our inquiry by asking questions of some of our followers. One thing that I choose to do is anyone can follow us, but we will only follow classrooms. And that's just something that's really important, and we probably will only follow primary level classrooms. It's just a decision that I made because I think that the content that older children might be sharing is not necessarily useful. But if there is a classroom that we find that there's a great connection, we would definitely follow. I encourage my parents to follow us, and kids will actually teach their parents about how to tweet. And we have about four parents that will tweet. Every once in a while, one of the kids will want to send a message from the Kinder Kids to his mom, like, happy birthday, mom, and this is from, you know. And it's been a tool that I think next year I've been practicing and trying to figure it out, and next year I'll be able to use it even more.
As Maria said, it is a very powerful tool, but just maybe those of us that tweet, and you find that sometimes you have someone that follows you and you think, oh, who are you? And because their username might be a little ambiguous, but there's that really valuable point in time teaching for the kids. Hop on. Do they have a profile? And yes, with our even with our class Twitter account, sometimes we've had to do that. Who is this person that's following us? How often are they tweeting? What are they tweeting about? So, you know, that's valuable teaching for the kids. And already, you know, I've had kids come in saying, oh, we've got some new followers today. We've checked them out. This one seems fine. Don't know about these two, so can you check them out? And, you know, that's whilst there's still that fear amongst some people, you know, they could be connecting with, you know, unsavoury people. But if you're teaching kids how to stay safe in this particular environment, you don't stop kids from crossing the road, you don't stop them from swimming in a pool. They're dangerous activities. But if you are educated and you know how to stay safe in those environments, then, you know, there's value in that. And it's the same with Twitter. I know that whilst I have been overseas, my sub hasn't quite kept the control over the tweets that I would have liked. And I've had, because my kids know, they know that the classroom Twitter username and password, and usually they know that you only tweet as a class when you're using that. But I've had a couple of little ones who've decided, I just might go and tweet individually with using this. And so I've had to get on and DM them. And email them as well and say, guys, remember our rules. Remember the protocols for Twittering. And what you are doing is not quite appropriate. What do you think? Do you think that this is an appropriate use of this tool? Come back, okay, Mrs. M. I'll speak to mum or dad about getting my own if that's the case. Just maybe be careful. If you're going to do that, be careful who you follow and how often
you tweet?
I talked about the having a parent night very early in the year to explain what an online presence looks like and the advantages for the learning in our room. And I always try to emphasize, this isn't about me. This isn't about putting my stuff out there. It's about the learning and what are the advantages for that. I think maybe all of you remember the H1N1 virus scare and alarm. And worry, one of the things that we were asked to do in our district is to make sure that there was a portal for parents to be able to connect to the classroom if we had to be out of school for a certain period of time. I set up something that we called a learning page, and it also thinned the walls of my classroom. We fortunately never needed to use it for any type of being out of school, but I used it for the kids to, when they opened up the laptops, to set up that to click on the learning page, follow that link so that it was up there ready. It has all the links. It has buttons that say, you know, read our class blog, read the blogs of others, and then other tools for reading, read an online story, links to things that, so they didn't have to type in the address. And what I found out was, well, that was homework, because they would go home. They knew that mariani.com was a link to our blog, our classroom blog, and on the blog was a link to the Learning Hub. And so they were at home creating things and using the tools that I had thought were really just going to, you know, like be useful in the classroom. So I recommend that type of create a hub, create a space where the links are easy and make it easy to make that learning happen and that exploration happen at home.
And whilst, yes, I really value using my students as the expert teachers, especially when it comes to, helping those parents. Sometimes there are parents who can't come up to school during school hours. So I do hold parent workshops at the start of the year, especially in that first semester. And that's, I guess, I do an introductory one, and then it's really based on their needs. But this year I've found, though, that some of them even weren't available to come up on maybe some of those set nights that were working for the majority of us. So I moved into online, running online workshops as well, using, is it Uvu? And I think that's what I was using, I can't remember now. But parents, that was a little scary for me to be doing that. But just a short little half hour, 45 minute chat that we had, and I was able to share screen and show them what to do. So be open to that as well.
I have a parent night near the beginning of the year too, and I invite the parents in, talk about all sorts of things that happen in grade one. But I also show them the blog, and usually by that time, one of the parents has figured out how to comment. I make a really big deal about that a parent has commented on a blog. And it becomes, wow, I've got to keep up. Last year when I did this, I made a big deal about the comment, and I got 8 more that very night. And before those parents went to bed, they felt they had to keep up with the Joneses and get that comment on the blog. Works for me.
And I also make a really big deal about the blog folios from the previous school year. Yes, sometimes initially when I hit the parents in that first week of school, we have our parent night and going, you know, they look around and they see me using all this technology. The kids have already come home talking about, you know, using the iTouch, using the iPods, and some of them are a little freaked because maybe they're not so familiar with those. But I make a really big deal about the digital portfolios that my previous students have created, showing them the content on there, how these kids are using a whole variety of multimedia to share their learning, and then they want in for their child as well.
You don't have to have a lot of video skills in order to be able to use video in your classroom. Don't think that you have to have polished videos to do it. Some of the best videos that we've done in my classroom have just been, let's point and shoot. And then if that didn't work, well, let's try it again, and let's have a second try at it. So don't worry about doing things perfectly.
And the same goes for audio as well. I visited Maria's classroom last week and looked at those massive room that she had.
It was empty.
It was empty, but I mean the space. And I actually said to Maria, well, okay, I stepped it out. Here's my room, my 9 by 7 meters, with at times I've had up to 30 children in there. So it's busy, it's noisy, which can make it a little difficult for when you're wanting to record audio. But I guess I just again have kids who take on the role of director. When I was over here last year, I bought one of those Hollywood things. Yeah. And so we had the quad on set, and kids tend to, when they hear that clap, they tend to respond to it. Or I, you know, and then they get the all clear when that recording's done. So even within my little confined space, that I like to be noisy, that recording can still happen. And as Kathy said, it doesn't have to be perfect. My kids actually find that they like to hear that other busy chatter going on in the background as they're recording their learning.
One of the things that we know that works really well for us is creating an environment and manipulating that environment to make it work. So when I have a child that's put a post up, I usually try to email the parent and say, check out Jacob's post, you know, new post on the blog. Or if we're creating a wiki project, and I rely on my network. I'll tweet it, I'll say, you know, new project, and put the link in Twitter, or email people so that we're able to have feedback as soon as possible, because for young students, the most important thing is that it happen and that it happen within a short amount of time. And once you tweet it, those people retweet or repost it somewhere else, and there's power in our network. So if you haven't created your own network, do that as well. So that's the end of the planned part of our presentation. This slide kind of lets you know where we're coming from, because there's nothing like getting kids ready for their tomorrow. And this is John Dewey, and he was certainly talking in a different time and place than where we are now, but it still holds very true. And we don't want to stay with yesterday. So kind of really sums up why we do it and how we feel about doing it. Again, here's the link to our wiki.
Does anybody have any questions, things that you're wondering about? Yeah.
I actually have two questions.
Okay.
How long is this available,
this link? Is there a time frame?
How long is the internet?
Okay. Well, I'm responsible for sharing what I'm learning in this week. And unfortunately, or I should say fortunately, I have another 6 weeks of summer. So I won't be sharing until September. And my second question is, you know, Twitter and Wiki and blogging and Skyping, if you could only choose one, as for us newbies, what would you choose?
Well, I started with blogging. I'd been to a workshop, learning how to use, create learning objects using PowerPoint, and there was a preschool teacher there who had a class blog, and I looked at it and thought, ooh, I could do that. Initially I did think, you know, this would really move kids along with their writing, give them a purpose for wanting to write. I was scared of putting that first word, even though this was the kids' blog. This teacher was doing it from her point of view, so she was blogging about what was happening in her classroom. I straight away saw it as, and I had year one at the time, and they were 5 and 6 year olds, so almost the same age as Maria's kinder kids, and Kathy's year ones now, and I thought, no, I want them to be the authors of this. So sure, I typed it, but they narrated it. But it was still fearful, because I thought, what if this is not good enough? But then I thought, you know what? I have an inquiry-based approach in my classroom. I'm constantly telling these kids, you know, learning is lifelong. You have to take risks. So we did. I saw within a very short space of time, it was more than just writing. It was a very, very powerful tool that took them to places that you could never imagine. But then the Skype worked too last year when I could blog.
I just want to say, it depends what you want to do. Come talk to me afterwards, and we'll say, what do you want to do in your classroom?
I'd just like to answer for me, because I'm going to take a little bit different perspective. We're at a conference that says building learning communities. And for me, that learning community for myself is where I would start. So if you don't have that network built up, you do need that. I was fortunate to be listening to podcasts on the EdTech Talk channel. I heard about this guy named Bob Sprankle. I started kind of investigating him. He had a class podcast that was going on, and through that I started hearing about this woman up in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, my most favorite name for a town in all the world, and I started, let me check out those links. And being a little ADD, but also always looking to not be stale, I started creating a network, and that's where I began. And then I saw the blog. I had always wanted to blog with children, and I knew the power of podcasting with children, and then I began to decide on what my purpose was, and what tool I was going to use. But it's the network. That's where I learn. It's not always available to us, so I would say build your network first.
This gentleman over here has had a ton of many times.
It seems like there's not a lot of people out there doing what you're doing at such a young level, and I'm wondering if you have people that you follow and get inspired by or that you could share. We'll definitely be following you.
well, that's what I did, because I didn't really see that. I was lurking on their blogs, and I guess it was my students who went and left a comment on Kathy's class blog before I'd even really we looked at Kathy's blog as a class. So I thought, I have to dig in. Here I am, practice what I preach, trust the learner. I didn't see the value of Twitter until I knew that Maria was at ISTE 2 years ago, and there was a reason. I had a colleague who was there, and I thought, now I can see why I need to keep up with this conversation. So I guess maybe follow us and then see who's within our learning network. That's what I do. We click on and just follow others. And again, but build, think about what your purpose is, and then build that community from there.
Yeah, when your K's are twittering, when do you start with pretty close to correct spelling? Or do you have them even abbreviate as we do with Twitter? Or do you want complete sentences? Where do you start? Where do you end up, I guess?
I use the same approach that I do with pencil and paper literacy. So if it's an unpublished work and it's a genuine piece of writing, I will put an editor's note in it. And I look at that as what they post on their blog. When we're posting as a class, I look for more correct spelling. And of course, you use that opportunity to scaffold that learning. Sure. A lot of times we might use a Google Doc to actually do the tweet, to write the tweet, and then decide that it's going to be put up. If we do it as a class, it might be shared writing, so the spelling becomes much more conventional. And we are representing our class in Twitter, so we try to have conventional spelling. But as we know, as adults, we want to keep within that 140 characters. So we don't always use conventional spelling. Did that answer it?
Yeah.
And for my year twos, they've actually seen that. They've seen their parents, chatting on Facebook or in Gmail chat, or they've seen them texting, and they've seen those abbreviations. So we've had the conversations about, okay, when is it appropriate to abbreviate? When isn't it? So again, mine. Have that invented spelling on their own blog, and we also have a writing blog that I don't edit. Sometimes we can't condense down into 140 characters what we might want to say on a tweet, so that's where they say, okay, well, can we just put a B for B? Can we use the number 4 or the number 2 for those words? And we have a discussion about whether it's appropriate or not to do that. And they will talk, I've heard them say, no, you can't write like that on the blog, that's only for Twitter. So, and we as adults, we know that, Yeah. So
it's the new literacy, right?
You've answered most of this for me already, but I'm just curious about the next step. The whole time you were presenting today, I wondered how you came together. Because it was like, we've got Canada, we've got New York, and we've got Australia. I mean, it's amazing what we have here. And it's obvious from checking on each other's blogs and Facebook and whatever ones you use. But when did you take that leap of faith where now you're person to person, and it's so apparent that you have a common philosophy and belief and passion? It just shines through.
So last year, so now you know how we met. We followed each other's blogs, and it developed.
And then last year at NEC, we met for the first time. We presented together. We'd never met face-to-face before, but we planned through Skype calls and through Google Doc, we planned the presentation. We presented at NEC last year. And then this year, Amanda was able to come over again, so we put in the proposal and presented at ISTE this year. And so, but she says she can't. Her husband won't let her do it 3 years in a row. We need to stop the get American. Did we see you get
on? Yeah, it was a risk. Energized professionally, the three of you?
Oh, my gosh.
Miles apart, but you're... Not miles apart.
But no, you can make it happen. And again, it was through one of my students, because I was actually at a blogging work, running a blogging workshop, and I had linked to Kathy's blog on the class blog purely for that workshop, and then I thought, I'm going to take this down, and that's where the child got to it before me. And I thought, there you go, he's a seven-year-old showing me what I should be doing. And again, when Maria went to NEC a couple of years ago, the colleague that was there, my kids had been interested about how you make maple syrup. So that's why Maria had made this this voice thread about that. She'd asked us as a class to come and comment on it. And I asked her, well, what's this conference that you're going to? She gave me the link, and that's when I realized that a colleague of mine was going to be there, and I thought, I've got to connect these two somehow. Lo and behold, Maria was actually at a workshop that was invite only. It was a leadership symposium. This colleague of mine was actually there. Gave the kids some maple syrup to bring back to class. Maria Skyped in, and that sort of really strengthened the whole connections as well. Yeah.
So you can see it's magic.
You can make it happen. It's
so
just,
go out and just do it.
Our time is up. We have our time.
Perfect.